A pattern is emerging on the world stage, which is fueled by the blatant disregard for the rules of law. Judicial systems and government prosecutors are rewriting laws to combat political and social dissidents. The UN's 2030 agenda pushes for mass migration of illegal immigrants. Community and city businesses are folding due to theft and riots. America's enemies are streaming across the southern border at the welcoming behest of Washington. And child trafficking is taking place at a staggering pace. The Apostle Paul refers to Satan as the lawless one. Jesus calls him the father of lies, while most commonly recognize the name of Antichrist. With all that's happening in the world, it's easy to see the lawless one is at work like never before in world history. Yet many in the church seem overwhelmed with, what can I do? Please consider joining us as we unpack the tactics of Satan with combating strategies that many in the church body are employing today on behalf of the Great Commission. Please stay tuned for Nations Take to the World Stage alongside the Lawless One. Headlines Meets Prophecy, July 2023. Hello, everybody. My name is Mark. You're watching and/or listening to the Russick Outlook. Thank you so much for joining. Today's discussion is Modern Headlines Meets Bible Prophecy, July 2023, where we take a peek around the world, what's going on in the headlines in different areas of the globe and how that may or may not potentially line up with what we see in Scripture leading up to the eventual return of King Jesus. And I think most of you, if not all of you, are very much aware that time is moving quickly. Events are escalating at an exponential pace. And I believe I see and I can identify patterns by the enemy on the global stage. I'm seeing some things that are consistent from certain nations that I would say have a bullseye on their back from people who are trying to usher in the eventual one world government. So I hope to break that down for you and also give you some examples of what some people are doing and how the church is standing. And also, one of the reasons I wanted to get into this too, I'll tell you up front, in this particular presentation, we are going to discuss a fair amount of politics. And this is my opinion. I believe that there's a fair amount of the church, if not a majority of the church, that are missing it when they do not get involved in politics. Many churches will say, it's not my thing. Jesus has it all under control. Whatever will be, will be. And that's not what I see in the Bible. So I wanted to get into that. I'm going to set the stage. I normally start with Israel, and I'll very shortly get into Israel, but I'm going to do a little back and forth because I want to set some things in motion about what the Bible has laid out as far as proper governance, and then some things that I'm seeing in the West and shift back to Israel and other nations as well. So And then we're going to get into some other topics. Before I begin, please hit the like and the subscribe button, whatever the platform you're on, YouTube, Rumble, all the podcast platforms. Would love to hear from you. Comment via social media. We're on Instagram, and now it's called X, no longer Twitter. So, again, if you could, that would be wonderful. As well as jump to the Russick Outlook and sign up for our email list. You'll see a pop-up window come up. And all we do is we notify you of events to come and some interactive presentations that we do on Zoom, with a live audience. And then we have begun a podcast platform where we're going to be interviewing guests. We had our first guest on a couple of weeks ago with Kathy Bixel, Apostle Kathy Bixel, who's delighted with that. And matter of fact, she will be on again in a couple of weeks. But we'll be also breaking down other areas, not just in specifically in ministry or ministers, people in politics and in business and in sciences and in the arts. And in family, too. I believe that'll be an important aspect of what we're trying to do. So we just notify you of those things. So let's get into this. Nations taking the stage with the lawless one. So let me break to video. I show you. These are some groups of nations, United Nations, which I believe represents almost 190 nations today. You have what's called BRICS, the acronym for Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa. You see the Israeli flag there. The middle on the right is NATO. Below that is the European Union and the Arab League and the red, white, and blue representing the United States. So these are some of the larger groups. It naturally does not cover them all, but we will get into most of them. We will be breaking down some areas in South America and Central America. There's some very interesting developments that are happening there. And so, I want to, you know, get into this pattern. So before I do, I want to break down something that I believe will help set the stage of how God's or how the Bible has laid things out as far as the governments are concerned and the nations. So God loves the nations of the world. Should be no surprise there. God created governments and established nations. Our Bible lays out the way that civil government is to work. It's pretty clear, starting in the Old Testament. If a nation will follow biblical principles of governance, to that extent, human suffering and poverty will be reduced. Conversely, this can be flipped. Human pain, suffering, and poverty can increase. The Bible also speaks to personal issues of life, family issues, church or congregational life, the foundation for civil governance, and when followed, a community or nation can prosper while living in peace and tranquility. So very briefly, I wanted to touch on a few things that I'm showing you, separation of church and state and the Mayflower Compact. So for this, I'm speaking specifically to America. One of the things that, you know, the left will fight is that when they say separation of church and state, that's a gross misnomer. That's an outright lie where they're saying the church cannot be involved in government. It's actually the reverse. And that came about from a group of Baptist churches or church in Connecticut that wrote to Thomas Jefferson, and basically they were questioning whether there would be a national religion, much as what they had left or their ancestors had left from England, from the Church of England. So, Jefferson's letter to them, which is the basis of separation of church and state, said, no, there will be freedom of religion, freedom to worship, whether you're a Christian or any other religion or sect, or again, if you are believe in atheism or agnostic, whatever it is, you're free to practice that. So that's where that came from. And that got twisted really pretty much. You can go back to the history in the mid-20th century. Lyndon Johnson was upset because while he was running for Senate in Texas, churches were speaking badly about him. So you can look up the history. And for those who don't believe that the biblical principles are the foundational structure of this nation, I say, you know, not only in the Constitution, but you can start with the Mayflower Compact. It's a very brief 5-10 minute read. I would strongly suggest you go online. And my point here is the church can and should be involved in the policies of what is happening around the world, in our country, in our nation. They should have a say. In other words, there is no legal basis for them to be stifled, to not have an opinion, to go in, and churches, you know, should be able to represent or display policies by different candidates, whether it's the left, the right, independent, doesn't matter. You can present that and, you know, you can showcase that. But unfortunately, I would say the church has shied away from it. And in some part, I would say, you know, that the result is removal of the Ten Commandments, removal of prayer from school, and a lot of the other things that you see going around. But my point is the Lord established nations, he established governments, and he established borders, even though some people may not like to hear that as well. So I wanted to lay that foundation before I get into this. So I talked about the lawless one as the title of this, and that comes from my basis for this is 2 Thessalonians 2:8-10. I'm going to go to video again, and I'm going to read the scripture. And then the lawless one will be revealed, whom the Lord will consume with his breath of his mouth and destroy with the brightness of his coming. So that describes the return of Jesus after the 7 years of tribulation. The coming of the lawless one is according to the working of Satan, with all power, signs, and lying wonders, and with all unrighteous deception among those who perish because they did not receive the love of the truth that they might be saved. What is lawless in the Webster's Dictionary defines it as contrary to or without regard for the law, lawless violence, being without law, uncontrolled by a law, unbridled, unruly, unrestrained, a lawless passion. And on the right, you know, you see these, I forget the name of what you call them, but they basically, they're describing other words that center around lawlessness, if you punch that in there. Anarchy, politics, philosophy, rebellion, disorder, anarchism. And that's subjective, but you get the idea. So Satan is referred to as the lawless one amongst an assortment of other names that we'll break down. So with that in mind, I wanted to first look at what I believe are strategies, and I'm going to first center on the United States very briefly, then switch back to Israel. So if you look on the screen, and if you are an American, or even, you know, no matter where you are, no surprise, the vehement attacks that are going on today, where the administration of 46 is trying to remove 45 from the ability to campaign and to run for president of the United States. And so one of the strategies is, and I would say pretty smart, you know. George Soros, Open Society Foundations, has a plethora of money laundering non-for-profits that just 250 to 300 companies. And at any rate, he can facilitate the finances through, shilling these companies, you know, putting out and financing the campaigns of people, hardcore progressives or what I would call Marxists. And, you know, you see this around the country, and many of them are now taking to not only releasing criminals throughout the streets. You see this with George Gascon in Los Angeles, Kim Gardner, St. Louis, Kim Fox in Chicago, or Cook County, I should say, Alvin Bragg in New York City, and many others. And I show you some of the breakdown there. So, and several of these are key. So you've got now with what's the attacks that are going on that are trying to take down 46. And this has been going on. Congress went through this. They impeached him a couple of times. And you'll see when I get to, you know, they've tried very similar tactics with Netanyahu in Israel. They'll come up with the most bizarre reasonings, but, you know, they tried him twice. They went through all these ridiculous hoops and hurdles, and, you know, he eventually came out clean out of all that. So they waited 2.5 years till the campaign starts, and then they're at it again, and simultaneously it moves in line with troubles that 46's son is now shedding light on in terms of some very malicious bribery, and there's a whole assortment of things that you can attach to that, and we'll touch on that in a little bit. And why? Because, you know, the United States is not only considered the preeminent superpower, that is, I would say China is on the Americans' heels, but part of what I call the 2030 agenda with the United Nations, one of their goals is to take down, it actually says in, the principal goals of it is the United States will no longer be the world superpower. So they intend to take the Americans down a notch because of the freedoms and because of the capitalism. And it falls flat in the face of their objectives. And plus, if you go to those founding principles that I discussed, they are antithetical to, is that the right word? I'm not sure if that's the right word. But they are juxtaposed, I'll say, to their objectives, anything that has to do with biblical principles, Western values. They define it as Western values, but that's really what it is. So my point here is they have financed and attacked the legal system. And they've done so in election laws. They've done so in prosecuting criminals, releasing criminals, riots. You know, you've seen this throughout. You see this now. It's happening in France, and it's because of some political decisions Macron has got engaged in. But, you know, it's heartbreaking. So that is a very definitive tactic. And you can look in the world today, and you can look, even when you saw the riots in 2020 and 2021, it made no sense. And people were just, you know, they were trying to pawn it off as, oh, yeah, you know, this is normal. So let's go back to Israel for a second. I want to stay on the legal system and justice. So Netanyahu is, and his government is attempting to instill judicial reform. And I show you some pictures of Tel Aviv and Jerusalem. And I mean, you'll have, I believe at one point you had almost 100,000 protesters in Tel Aviv. And eventually you had almost as many fighting for him and for these reforms, because these are paid and propped up, much like what we saw in America in 2020. And so I wanted to kind of get into this. It's a little bit. I don't want to get too far down a rabbit hole, but Israel naturally is not a democracy with a constitution the way we would know it. They have a very convoluted way of governing, where they have a Knesset. They have 120 seats. Long story short, you need to have the majority. Netanyahu with the Likud party has 64 seats. So what you have in the legal system today over there, you have judges. They have unlimited terms. They choose other judges. So you have what would be equivalent to the Supreme Court, and there's three. And the people who, if the government makes the laws and the interpretation is viewed as, which I'm not sure the word I want, but that they find it unreasonable. I think that's the word that they will use too. If they say that it's unreasonable, they can throw the laws out. They have that kind of power. And the difficulty also is you have nine people on this board, I'll call it. Three of them are Supreme Court justices, and you have to have a majority in order to say yay or nay. So that would mean 7 out of 9. If those three Supreme Courts, the way we know it, were to get together and vote a consistent pattern, they can shut it down by themselves. So they have unlimited, unwielding power over the laws and what's happening in Israel. So this Likud party is trying to instill some oversight to it. So it's not anything that's drastic. But again, that's their business. That's their what they want to do governing-wise. What I find particularly interesting is the outrage of the world against this, starting with America 46. And for 46 to lecture Israel on law and their judges is really pretty ludicrous, considering the state of our judicial system today and the massive corruption that we're seeing in Washington. So it really doesn't, have any water. But at the same time, we have no rights to say or dictate, what another nation does in terms of its internal politics. And we've always tried to stick our nose into it, particularly the left. I'll just put it that way. So the other aspects of it is you see a lot of this pressure is coming from Europe in terms of boycotts and things that they want to do. So I wanted to show you who are leading some of these efforts. So Yuval Harari, which I found very interesting, has been very vocal on the airwaves. For those who don't know, he is the principal voice for technology and science for the World Economic Forum. He is an Israeli. I'm sure he claims himself to be Jewish, but all of his speeches and words, he's not a practicing believer. I'll put it that way. And he's got some pretty, pretty dark roots and beliefs. And he's one who's pushing for hacking the human body, hacking the human anatomy, with technology, and I've covered much of that in the past. But he's on the airwaves, so he's going on news programs in Israel and in the West, in the United States, wherever he can be heard. And they're calling him a historian. And he says, the most precious aspect of liberal democracy isn't majority rule, but limiting the power of the ruler in order to protect citizens' rights. Thomas Friedman, a very influential New York Times columnist and opinion writer, he met apparently very recently with 46, and he writes a pretty big op-ed. If Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu continues trying to ram through a bill that would strip Israel's Supreme Court of its most important legal authority to check extreme appointments or decisions of Israel's political echelon, and do so without a semblance of national consensus, it will fracture Israel's military and undermine not only shared values between the U.S. and Israel, but also vital interests. He goes on to say in that it is up to 46 to, quote unquote, save Israel. So, you know, this is, you know, a massive push. Then I show you on the right 46's response. He's refused to have Netanyahu over since his election, but I did hear recently over the past few days that he will be having him in September. Ehud Barak, who was the former prime minister in the early 2000s, Israel, he has been known to be one of the focal points in pushing these riots, pushing these protests all across Israel. And I just want to point out that he was one who had been reportedly, and it was verified through plane records and whatnot, that he met with Jeffrey Epstein dozens of times, flew on his private plane, was down in Florida with him and on his island. So if you know anything about Epstein and you know, the history there and the fact that this guy is with him more than once, you know, I would say, okay, give somebody the benefit of the doubt of one time, but I'm sorry, you know. So these are the types of people that are really, they're over the top outraged at Israel's push for this. So, you know, I'm looking going, okay. The other one I wanted to point out is Hassan Nasrallah, who is the leader of Hezbollah in Lebanon for Iran. And he's kind of, you know, licking his chops saying, yeah, these are problems with Israel. And the unrest fuels his delight because part of what they're doing is they're trying to get the military to not report. So there, you know, a good part of Israel's military is the civilian structure, the volunteer structure, and so they're appealing to them to not report if called upon for military service. So these are some of the types of characters. Then you go back to Soros and his son Alex, and you know, just the history there, and you can look all of this up. I mean, these are some dark circles that these people run in. And again, you know, his son, we know, has visited the 46 at the White House, or at least his administration. What was initially reported 17 times, then I heard it was up to 21. So some other tactics that they're employing. They attacked the Israeli economy. And this is another aspect that I found interesting. I'll show you. Moody's tried to downgrade them, or reportedly banks were going after Israel. The enormous pressure from the progressive left to describe the situation in Israel as the end of democracy. So has anybody heard of the end of democracy? I'm saying this tongue in cheek because everything you see with 46 and the courts, 45 and the courts, and anything in America that goes against what the left's policy, it's the end of democracy. Oh, no, oh, no. Those same chants go on elsewhere. So it's almost like it, because the source is the same, they're parroting the same words, the same tactics. So the enormous pressure from caused Moody's to issue a report that warns the realization of the risk to the economy following the tension surrounding the continuation of the legal legislation. So they're threatening Israel's bank accounts. To the disappointment of Moody's, it did not downgrade Israel's credit rate. Why? The economy is strong and very good shape with $212 billion in reserves, 4% annual growth, and billions of dollars of income that are coming from natural gas. It will take much more to downplay this, what some are calling phony pressure. Side note, I don't have it in here. The natural gas has just exploded in Israel's economy. They've discovered this over the last 10, 12 years on the Mediterranean coast. They have companies coming in, I believe it's seven, for the rights to drill. Chevron, I believe, is one of them from America. Five of them are in Israel, and they're on the Tel Aviv stock market. So the financial blessings that the Lord has bestowed upon this tiny nation that a little over 100 years ago, you know, was desolate with malaria-infested swampland and is now blooming because, you know, the Lord called his people back just as what was prophesied. The nation was born in a day just as what was prophesied. And, you know, even though the very next day after it was born, all the surrounding Arab nations attacked them, they survived and they went strong. These are all signs that the Lord is giving you that Jesus Christ is real. These are things that were written thousands of years ago that would transpire today, which is why I highlight this, because we're literally seeing the Bible's revelations coming right before our eyes. Ben Shapiro wrote a piece that I'll just briefly touch on that I thought was great. He says the current Israeli government had to pass judicial reform. It is incredibly mild. It merely says that the judiciary cannot simply declare a law unconstitutional, or what I said earlier, unreasonable, in a land with no written constitution on the basis of it being unreasonable. Again, he goes on. Let me put this onto video in case anybody, you know, wants to grab it. But it's I love what he puts down here near the end. He says the absurdity of morons like Thomas Friedman calling on 46 to step in and currently claiming that the U.S. Supreme Court is undemocratic and undermining its own legitimacy is apparent. It's more about Democrats increasing apathy for Israel than anything else that's based. You don't have to look very far in the democratically controlled Senate or the, you know, very, even though they're minority in Congress, you know, very strong. You have strong examples of anti-Semitism in Congress, and I've covered this before in the past. So staying on that theme now, some of this will center on America. We're going to, you know, do a little back and forth because of what happened in July. You had the release of 46's son, had a plea deal that was over the top, just bizarre. And the judge read what the plea bargain was, and she basically said, you know, you can't do this because, amongst other things, it was not only an incredibly mild sentence compared to what he was pleading guilty of, it said that you can't prosecute him for anything else that is covered currently in what's going on. So you had what we call whistleblowers in America, the IRS. Two whistleblowers came forth on the left-hand side. And, you know, they went into explicit details with records, you know, showing the money exchanges of what was going on, showing the shenanigans, if you will. Then you had the son's business partner come in and testify the other day. And then I showed you, too, the different people that are attacking 46 and trying to strike him down. Jack Smith is the attorney now going after him for January 6th. But I intentionally wanted to show you something. 45 went to Davos in 2018, and I show you there with him with Klaus Schwab. And he was, to his typical self, very bodacious, bravado, but he, in no uncertain terms, stuck up for the national sovereignty of America, said, you people, you know, knowing what you're up to will not take us down. You will not remove our freedom. So here you had the president sticking up for America, and this doesn't get reported. This doesn't. So he's gone into the hornet's nest, if you will, and just kind of threw it at them right away. And during that time, Soros spoke to the group and said, this man will, and I'm paraphrasing, and again, I've reported on this probably, you know, a couple of years ago, where he said, do not worry, we will not have enable him to be reelected. So their strategies, their tactics, they did not want him because he undermined what the plan was. You had 8 years of 44. They expected Hillary to go for another eight and so forth. So this was a big, huge interruption, and they're doing everything they can to take him down. And he also spoke on later, right after that, oh, no, it could have been a little while, but that same year at the UN on religious freedom and the right to life movement, things that, you know, whether you like him or not, and I'm not saying, you know, you do whatever you want in terms of voting, just vote. But from a Christian perspective, there's no president in American history who adhered to biblical principles the way this man did and took on just an incredible amount of pressure that I don't believe, you know, just 99.9% of people would not be able to withstand. And, you know, if, like, for instance, if you see what's going on in America today with 46's son, just think for a second if that was 45 sons or daughter. You know, that complete opposite. So these people are as phony as a $3 bill as far as I'm concerned. And, yeah, I'm going to express my opinion here because this is serious. So sticking with Lawless One, I'm going to go to censorship because that is against the law. It's freedom of speech. We should be able to have the right to say, you know, whatever we want, whether you want to agree with me or not. We're free to have those opinions and to engage. And so you had a hearing in July on censorship on Capitol Hill with, amongst others, Bobby Kennedy, who is running for president of the United States on the Democratic side. You had the, I think, the principal writer or editor of the laptop case, you know, how they were censored. And so true to form, here's Bobby Kennedy walks in, and immediately the Democrats tried to censor him and have him removed. So you're attempting, you're speaking at a censorship a hearing on censorship, and the Democrats try to censor the Democrat. Why? Because the Democrat is not falling in line with what they want from him. So he is basically, I personally, and I think I've said this last month, I find him a breath of fresh air. I don't agree with everything that he does, but he's a true liberal. And you know, that's the foundation of much of what American politics was, is that you have the conservative and the liberals, and, you know, the hope is that you find balance somewhere in between, and you can agree to disagree and compromise. But you do not see that today in either party. It's all or nothing. The censorship, and then, you know, something else now that he's running for president. He's got over 20% of the polls. And so anybody who's running for president has the rights and has Secret Service assigned to them. 46 has turned him down. This falls under the Homeland Security, Mayorkas. So not only are you turning him down, but if you think about, his father was killed, his uncle was killed. We're talking about Bobby Kennedy in 68 and John Kennedy in 63. So they've been at the, and he contends that this was done by the CIA. So, but the fact that, you know, we're being so petty and, oh no, we're not going to give you Secret Service. It's a violation of laws. And this is why I say the Lawless One. So I want to get into some of the other things that are happening in the nations. And I'm going to show some things of, I believe, what is happening in the West, or at least in America. I see it in Canada, see it in parts of South and Central America. They call it progressives. It's not. It's Marxism. Progressive is a nice marketing term. Again, my opinion. But you know, and principally it's going against the values and people of faith. One of the and these are outlined in their books and strategies, and you can go back to you know, a lot of the tactics from Marx and what he laid out, and Lenin and Mao and others, and Saul Alinsky and Rules for Radicals, which is, you know, the playbook of 44, and others, who incidentally dedicated his book to Satan, calling him the ultimate radical or revolutionary. So, you know, you have this happening, and at the same time now of what we're seeing is communism is taking shape. So I'm going to show you two maps, communism and Islam. And the lower right shows you where communism is on the world stage, and the top map on the left shows you the amount of Muslim nations. And the reason I'm showing the two of them together is because it almost goes against, it's similar, it lines up to the expression of the enemy of my enemy is my friend. Meaning that they have a lot of the same goals, where they want to take down the West. They want to take down, say, Muslims, some of the more, I guess, the Shiites, and not all of them. I'm saying that. And a lot of these are the governing bodies, not the people themselves. You know, they go against the Western values and a lot of what is being, you know, bought upon society today, you want to call it wokeism or whatever. And then the Marxists and the revolutionaries and the communists. And I believe this is what, you know, that infiltration is what we're seeing. So again, to me, these are just more signs of evil showing its face on the world stage, moving towards that goal. Switch gears just a little bit, but staying with nations. I wanted to briefly talk about some developments with Saudi Arabia. So Saudi Arabia is in an interesting position. They've had a lot of spats back and forth with 46 over energy. When they asked to lower the energy prices and increase production, they did the opposite because for a number of reasons, where 46, you know, they felt jaded, the government of Saudi Arabia. So anyway, Netanyahu gets into government, and he said one of his principal objectives is to strike the Abraham Accords with Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia, for the most part, is considered the leader of the Muslims, the leading Muslim nation, particularly, you know, when you look at those two capitals and Mecca. The Persians, I think, would argue that that's a Shia Sunni thing, but he sees that potential as, and I wouldn't even call it a peace treaty. You have some trade accords, economic accords, agreements with the four Abraham Accord nations: Bahrain, UAE, Morocco, and why can't I think of the other one? It'll come to me. But there's a fourth. And there is some joint cooperation today with Saudi Arabia and the Israeli government. So I wanted to just, there was a piece that came out just a few days ago. I have it on the screen about the Saudi peace deal. Abbas focused on the relationship between the Saudi kingdom and the U.S., saying the two countries face common enemies. He also said that the Saudis demanded the signing of a natural defense agreement with the United States similar to NATO, which would provide advanced technology for national defense as well as the development of a Saudi nuclear program. Jumping down to the bottom, he also stated that Washington has no right to lecture the rest of the Middle East about the necessity of an independent judiciary. So I found that interesting. Getting back to what we were talking about originally. So Saudi Arabia, in its role, has since reached out to China, has struck some accords with China. I mentioned BRICS earlier. We're going to get in a little bit more of that. They are looking to establish themselves with BRICS, the BRICS currency that's coming down. But at the same time, they would like to have peace with the United States and agreements with the United States, but they do not find them to be a stable partner right now, particularly with what they're seeing. So, you know, I believe they're playing both hands, and it's what they have to do. And these nations, you can't always look at it from the value or the perspective of the West. They are doing what's best for them in their eyes. Switching gears to Russia. So Russia is obviously first and foremost, and when we're thinking about Ezekiel 38 and 39, the Gog of Magog war, and I talk about this pretty much every month now with Bible prophecy, and I just want to pause for a second in case you're seeing this for the first time. The odds of a prophecy 2,600 years old coming to pass where we see all of the world players, where it says Russia, Turkey, Iran, parts of North Africa, and other surrounding nations will invade Israel. And you have three armies on the northern tip of Israel right now in Syria, and you have Russia's influence now moving across not only West Africa, but into central and eastern parts of it. So you had a military coup a few weeks ago in Niger. And the reason I'm pointing this out is you had Russian military forces, part of the Wagner troops, were in there weeks beforehand. They are supporting it. So this, to me, I'm just watching this take place. And I show you this up on the screen. This is the General Abad al-Rahman al-Tashani. He declared himself the new leader. And he is considered loyal to Russia. And according to official reports, there's a telephone conversation between him and the Russians after the coup. As mentioned, U.S. condemned the coup and supports the former president who was ousted from the military. So this is, you know, something else to watch, because if you look at, and you know, most people will know that Africa is the largest continent. Between Russia and China, they are gobbling up or having major influence throughout Africa, as well as other countries, and we'll show you. The state of Russia and Ukraine continues to escalate. And my concern is people will kind of get dulled into, oh, this is going on now for 18 months or so. But anything can trigger a world war from this. As a matter of fact, if we stay on the theme of Gog of Magog, and I talked about the natural gas that's happening there, Putin is looking for resources, and Israel in that situation could be what Ezekiel describes as the hook in the jaw. He says God will put a hook in his jaw. The other thing that could potentially happen, and is very close, Iran continues to build up its nuclear weapons. You can go to Jeremiah, where it talks about Israel attacking and destroying Elam, which is a portion of the coastline of Iran. And, you know, not so coincidentally, that's where some of their principal nuclear factories are, or underground bomb developments, I'll call it. And if Israel was to attack, Russia would potentially be obligated to engage. So you could have some things just, you know, go to a domino effect very quickly, very easily. And I say all this because we don't know, could happen a year from now, could happen 5 years from now, 10 years from now. I don't know. I'm not saying that. But it could happen tomorrow. And Jesus tells us to be on the lookout, to be watchmen on the wall, to be prepared, because his coming could come at any second. All of the things that lead up to the tribulation have transpired. So there's a train of thought that the Ezekiel 38 war would be just before the tribulation, or before the rapture, or right after. Either way, you could really be looking at something very significant happening very shortly, and what will be your response? Do you have that relationship with Jesus today? And that's something that you have to ask, because as we see these things develop, I'll give you another instance. There will be tremendous famine in the time of the tribulation. Ukraine, I believe it's at least a third of the world supplier of grain, and Russia shutting down the seaports for exporting this. So, you know, you have, you know, the potential of nations, you know, more starvation is happening. What will happen to, you know, Europe, I would say, was fortunate. The winter was not that bad last year compared to other years. So, you know, with energy prices skyrocketing in Europe still, supplies down, you know, you could see some very, very harsh, cold winters, cold conditions, which could trigger things. And that could trigger, you know, where Israel is now striking deals into Europe to move some of that natural gas from the Mediterranean into Europe. Putin may say there's the hook in the jaw. Or again, could it be attacking Iran? You know, maybe they have to come in. But all of these things are lining up. I'm going to join to BRICS now. BRICS, again, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. There are 40 nations that are looking to join. South Africa officials want BRICS to become the champion of the developing world. Argentina, Iran, Saudi Arabia, UAE, Cuba, Democratic Republic of Congo, Comoros, Gabon, Kazakhstan have all expressed interest in joining. And the other interesting development is they're meeting in August, and they supposedly had want to put up their form of digital currency, which is designed to combat and take down the U.S. dollar. Fortunately for America, I would say, India apparently just several weeks ago had balked at this idea because they still have significant investment with the West, with America in particular. So they said they will not become part of this. But they are planning to float this new currency to settle international trade payments to challenge the global reserve status of the U.S. dollar. It's about, you know, how can we take down the dollar? Because the dollar is considered and is still the number one instrument for financial transactions and trade throughout. Part of this also is the result of the sanctions that went against Russia. The world saw that. The world saw how that impacted the economy and the hits that they took. So they, you know, especially if they are considered an enemy of the West or an enemy of the United States, if you're part of these communist or Marxist regimes or hardcore Muslim nations. So they are looking at alternates to the American dollar. Russia seeks to work with Africans to weaken the U.S. dollar. Again, so Putin is hosting a summit, I believe, again, I'm not sure if whether it was hosted in July or coming up in August, but he's gathering the African nations. He's bringing them in. He's bringing that influence in, and he wants them to engage in the digital form of currency. They want to work with all of the African leaders that they can to weaken the dollar. And again, the dollar becomes weak. It falls in line with taking America down. Then you also had another interesting development. Russia visited North Korea last month in July, and Kim had put on quite a display. I'll show you some of this on video. You know, working with the Russian defensive chief Shoigu. So you see in the pictures on the left of Kim Jong-un showing him that they're working in agreements. You have Russian scientists working with North Koreans who are working with the Iranians on their nuclear developments. So you have that nuclear arsenal in North Korea. You have it in China. Russia is the world's largest supplier of nuclear weapons, and then the United States. So things are getting dicey. Things are getting difficult. And, you know, they're also engaged in joint military exercises. You know, much of what, you know, you see Israel working with America and others, you also see the same on the East. You see China working with Russia in joint military drills and North Korea and Iran and others. So, you know, those are things to look at. I want to talk about briefly the invasion, because this is nations, these are strategies, these are tactics. So no surprise, if you're familiar with the headlines, if you're an American, you know the American border, the southern border, is being bombarded over the last couple of years. We have a open for sale sign, come right in. There's just no law. Again, there's, you know, there's just complete violation. And they estimate that several million have crossed in the last few years, and that supposedly, and they've caught a number of terrorists. I think they've caught upwards of 140 names or people that have been on the terrorist watch list, and 80,000 Chinese immigrants. And these are, you know, you say the word immigrant and you want to have that compassion and that heart, but these are illegal entries. These are violating the laws. And you want to go through a port of entry? Sure. But that's not what they're doing. So there were some interesting developments that happened where they estimate now 80,000 Chinese have come into the United States, most of them young men, many believed to be part of the military. We know that there's Chinese police in this country. We know there's Chinese police in New York City. So Ecuador is considered a major port of entry, that supposedly is pretty simple to get in from any nation you want in through Ecuador. So I'm going to show you some maps up here of just what's going on. They come in through Ecuador, and then they get into Central America through Panama. So I'm showing you number one. Look at that map up on the right. And through Ecuador, they then get in through Panama and work their way up and eventually into Mexico. And we see this. We see the droves. We see the marches. And they're, you know, they're coming on up hundreds of thousands at a time in some instances. And number three shows you all of that land of entry, a port of entry from California to Arizona to New Mexico, Texas. And I guess that'll stop at Texas. Then if you look at the Gulf of Mexico, just last month I announced that Chinese are forming military bases in Cuba. So if you look at Chinese military entering this country, as well as others, you know, other enemies of the United States, some are, you know, are looking to come in for the right reasons, I imagine, but you know, regardless, they are illegal. And you see, so if you are an enemy of the West, if you are an enemy of the United States, if you want to take down, as a matter of fact, part of the UN 2030 agenda is mass migration. And again, it says this openly in their papers. They want to overwhelm borders. You see this in throughout Europe. You see this in the United States now. I live near New York City. New York City is being overwhelmed. I go into the city. I see these people on the streets. Hotels are now, you know, they're at maximum capacity. Mayor Adams, you know, finally, and his hand was forced by the Governor Abbott of Texas, and, you know, where they're busing to people that are coming in to sanctuary cities, to, you know, San Francisco and Chicago and New York and others. And you understand it, but now here you have a Democratic mayor of the largest city in the world, or the most popular, I would say, is saying we have a crisis at the border. We need something done. We need the laws upheld. And again, you know, the other outcome of this is you have mass drug addiction. You have Chinese infiltrating the cartels and working with the cartels to get fentanyl and other addictive drugs. So you have overdoses. You have, you know, children just being devastated. Then there's the child slavery market. And all of this is going on. And I'm going to touch a little bit more on what's happening to the children. And our government knows this. This is no secret. It's out in the open. But many people will tend to shy away from it. So when you see these atrocities happening and you don't have the gumption or the fortitude to say evil is at our doorstep and you are part of the church and you're saying, I don't want to get involved in politics, it's not my area, I'm sorry. You know, that's, in my opinion, you're derelict of duty. You know, we need to do whatever we can, and it certainly begins on our knees and in prayer, but this is what's happening. And this is what, yes, this is what Jesus said would happen, but he also called us to stand, to occupy, to believe, to have faith. So I'm going to switch gears a little bit, staying with China. China is now rewriting the Bible and other religious texts. And I wanted to give you an example because of the mass power. And I'm emphasizing China because if you look at Revelation, the Euphrates River gets dried up. An army of 200 million comes with the kings of the East. That has to be China. So, you know, they're part of what that eventual war, they will work their way into Israel, into the Valley of Armageddon. So they are part of this. This is why, you know, I keep an eye on China. I keep an eye on Russia. Because we're seeing this unfold before our eyes. And again, I go to the two legs of Daniel that are the East and the West. And we see the clear delineation of the nations of the East and the West. And it says they will be like miry clay mixing with iron. It will not adhere. It will not stick. So you have them rewriting the gospel. And it's a 10-year project, but I wanted to give you an example of what they're doing. So in the Gospel of John, Jesus famously confronts the accusers of a woman caught committing adultery, saying, "Let one among you who was guiltless be the first to throw a stone at her." This was the scene where she was caught in adultery and they were ready to stone her to death. The chastened accusers slinked away. Jesus said to the woman, "Has no one condemned you?" "No one, sir." And he said, "Neither do I condemn you. Go away and from this moment sin no more." So if you're a Christian, you're probably familiar with this scripture. So it's an incredibly beautiful, compelling, wonderful story of love and of mercy and of kindness. What is the CCP doing? They are rewriting the Gospel of John where it ends with this: "Not with mercy, but Jesus himself will stone the adulterous woman to death." And they are also, so I mean, that's how that scripture is being written. Because that woman was wrong, they're saying that Jesus took the law into his hand and stoned the woman, which obviously is bizarre. But that's the point of what we're seeing today. So they're rewriting the Bible, the Quran, and other sacred texts. Xi Jinping's quest is to make the faithful serve the party rather than God. So this is a staple of communism, of Marxism, that the government becomes your supplier, your resource. Staying with government's infiltration of the bank accounts, Nigel Farage, who is the leader in England for Brexit, for the for England moving out of the European Union, and he found himself, went to take money from his account, and it was closed. They didn't give him any reason. Then he went to open another account in another bank. Six different banks shut him down. Eventually, this caught wind and got into a lot of the headlines, and they eventually restored it. But the point here is, and we've seen this before, this is what will happen in a totalitarianism regime. The government will know where you're banking, what you're doing, what your policies are, what you're saying, what you stand for, and they will have the ability to shut you down. And in this instance, they shut down Farage. We also saw this in America with Chase and Jamie Dimon shutting down different religious organizations, non-for-profits. And I show you the example here of Sam Brownback, who is a former senator, governor of Kansas, and just an incredibly gifted, compassionate Christian who's just done great works for different non-for-profits, for faith, for freedom, not only here in America, but elsewhere. So the counter to this is there are 19 states' attorney generals sent a letter to J.P. Morgan Chase accusing it of discrimination against conservative religious groups. The bank denies it. The business of America should become business again, not politics. So, you know, they won out, and I'll get to that in a second. But I guess, you know, my point is that we see this coming. You know, it's on our doorstep. And this is part of what eventually will happen with technology and with AI, and you'll have that ability to have that world government central database that will know through various forms of technology that I've described in the past and many, many people elsewhere have as well. Well, they'll know where you are, where you're traveling. They'll be able to limit you. Do you have the proper health certificates? Facial recognition, there's just a whole assortment of things. And if you do not adhere, and we see this in China today, you have social crediting systems. And if you don't reach a certain credit point, they can shut you down. They'll shut down your bank account. So, you know, we see touches of this happening. You know, this is not the tribulation naturally, but you see the signs of it. UFOs. I wanted to just touch on this briefly because there was hearings again in the United States Congress, second year in a row. You had several people appearing. I did want to highlight here on the video David Grush. He confirmed non-human bodies in an exchange with a senator. Congressman Gates from Florida had said he spoke with a flight crew who witnessed a UFO over the Gulf of Mexico in a diamond formation of four craft. The witnesses said when he approached the UFOs, the radar went down, his FLIR malfunctioned, I don't know what that is, and he had to manually take a photo that Gates has seen personally, football-sized UFOs, and, you know, I show you that seen on the right, and I've covered that before. You can see some of these videos online. You can look them up. And whether you believe it or not, it's fine. But 15 years ago, 20 years ago, people thought you had a tinfoil hat. Now the government is saying it. And the reason I find this as non-human bodies interesting is I think of the Nephilim, Genesis 6 and things there. And, you know, Jesus did say it prior to his return, it shall be as in the days of Noah, which was the outpouring of evil through the Nephilim. And so, you know, do we see some of that? And, you know, this, I don't want to go down that road now. But I did want to point out that I think it was 2005, and I did this on a prior presentation, where American military in Afghanistan were on a very secure mission, and they drew, they weren't able to take pictures, but they drew out what they had seen and what they needed to transport, which was a body, which they estimated to be somewhere around 13 feet. They said it stunk like nothing else that they'd ever known. It was as solid as anything. It weighed, I think they said, 1,100 pounds. And, you know, they showed several soldiers over this. Again, this was like a kind of like a courtroom sketch of it. They didn't know what it was, but they were, you know, it was a hush-hush mission. And I say that, too, because, you know, what these people that are coming forth as whistleblowers are saying, that NASA and other areas of government are punishing them if they say anything about this. So I did a thing on UFOs as it relates to the Bible. I will say, you know, I believe you can see scriptures pretty prevalent, and Ezekiel in particular, I think of in Ezekiel 1. And I kind of went through a number of portions. And I guess principally what I wanted to just briefly say is Satan is the ultimate copycat. And, you know, what he sees the Lord do is what he mimics but distorts. And there are things that you can see in the Bible about wheels hovering, raising, workings, angels working it, actually physically working it. So when we see these objects being reported at speeds that defy physics, as a matter of fact, I think there was one thing. Let me see if I saw this. No, I don't have it in here, but one of them had reported, one of the people who testified had reported, one of the congressmen or congresswoman's questions were, how do you know that this defies physics? And they said they captured it on video in massive 100-mile-an-hour plus winds where the objects were either not moving or able to go up against it without any fluctuation at all. So any craft, anything going into 100-mile plus winds, hurricane, gale force winds, you're going to teeter. You're going to shake a little bit. This, they said, was like nothing for them. So, again, this is nothing that we have that we can personally do today. As I'm starting to wind this down, the two unions in Hollywood are on strike. And The reason I say this is Hollywood's in bad shape right now in terms of attendance, not only in the theaters. And I'm personally, you know, I say please have compassion and prayer. I hope this ends very, very shortly, because not only are we talking about the studios and the actors, but all of the people in between. So you can think of a crew from a cameraman to a producer to a writer to a director, but there's the people who supply the props. There's the restaurant people. There's the catering people. There's the hotel people. All of these industries are tremendously impacted by this. And a lot of this, ironically, is a strike against AI and the influence that AI can have and the money that these people believe that they will lose as a result of it. The reason I wanted to start that is you had a release called Sound of Freedom, a theatrical release by Angel Studios in early July that blew most box office numbers out the door. And I wanted to touch on this because not only of the quality of the film, but the reaction, sadly, amongst many in the media, some in Hollywood, accusing people. So I should preface it. This is about a man who saw child trafficking, child sex trades, where these people, children, could be traded 5-10 times, sexually traded, and you know, in a matter of days, weeks, or years. So he left his position in the military and went on this campaign to rescue many of these children, and his story was written and put into copyright form, or I'm not sure, playwright or book. Any rate, Disney had the rights to it. They eventually said, no, we're not going to produce this and we're not going to develop this. So Angel Studios took it on. Tremendous success, compassion. I say all this for a couple of reasons, because it's what we see that's on the border today in America. We see child sex trafficking. We see the infiltration of the cartels moving these children in and out. And this is very, very real. And the concern I have is that the media is saying, well, you know, well, they're downplaying it. This is QAnon, you know. And meanwhile, you know, this was written before anything ever came out about QAnon. So the reaction of the media to downplay it, number one, screams volumes to me, because really we're at the point in this country, I think, and in a good part of the world, where if the media says up, then it's probably down. If they say, you know, sunny skies, it's probably rain. So when I saw this, and they were coming at it, you know, again, which is typical, their strategies are always the same words, the same sentence, the same slogans. So they were coming out after this. So here's what I did want to read. So Disney turned it down. They took it to Amazon. They got turned down. Netflix turned down. They decided to pre-sell tickets, and they were able to get it into 2,600 theaters, and it beat out Disney's Indiana Jones on July 4th. And this is all based on a true story. Indiana Jones' budget was $294 million. Sound of Freedom's budget was $15 million. Indiana Jones released in 4,600 theaters. Sound of Freedom released in 2,600 theaters. Indiana Jones, and I'll put all these stats up. On July 4th, $11.5 million. And on July 4th, this film took in $14 million. Just about one day it paid for its total budget. So, you know, the expression I say here, if God is in it, nobody's going to stop it. And another reason I wanted to talk about this, and I am winding this down, it was odd. When I do these, I felt like I mentioned a movie earlier in the year in January. Then I found myself doing it again, a Christian movie. Because if you're a Christian and you see the quality of productions over the years, it's been horrible. It's been, you know, not even B movies, they're C movies. And now this year, you're seeing some excellent quality come out. And I found myself just highlighting it because I think we need to recognize these heroes of the arts, these people, Sound of Freedom, the courage that it took to write that and to hustle and get that produced and out there in the theaters. That's an enormous amount of work and dedication. And these are Christians who were doing this. So I always found it interesting that some churches will talk about it. For instance, The Chosen, which is, again, same Angel Studios, which is the story of the gospel. And to me, if you're in a church, support it, speak about it, you know, maybe have movie night at a church. And I'm going to show you how one church did this recently. Bring the theater. It's a great way to not only see some great quality films as what we're seeing now today, but things to talk about, and it's current. So on video, I just highlighted some ones. The Jesus Revolution we saw, Sound of Freedom, The Chosen. His Only Son was a small, much smaller quality production. It was about Abraham, but it was released by Angel Studios. But it was still good. It was still, I would say, you know, it was an eye-opener in terms of it gave you a good eyes look or a good vantage into what Abraham might have been experiencing, what the surrounding landscape looked on his day. And then there's a movie called Nefarious. And I show you in the middle on the right here, Jack Hibbs and his church. He had movie night, and he had the writer out there, and you know they did. So they played the movie, and it's a great movie. It's really a two-person ensemble, and if you see the trailer, it almost looks like. I rented it from Amazon, so I don't know whether they cut the trailer, but it looks like a scary horror movie. But it's really a two-person ensemble for the most part. And it's a dialogue between a prisoner who is demon-possessed and an attorney who is trying to see whether he's going to have the death penalty or not. Incredible script, incredible workings. And this particular writer who did it, his testimony of the vehement attacks, demonic attacks against him, members of his crew, members of his production, just taking down days and weeks off of the production. So it was obvious the enemy did not want this out. So I say all this because, you know, here you have people taking a stand in the arts, putting out great quality productions with an important message in some instances. Jesus Revolution, Sound of Freedom, True Stories, The Chosen, His Only Son. Nefarious was only an example of what would have been, but if you watch the movie or read the book, you'll see that the script is pretty spot on. So, you know, my encouragement or exhortation, if you will, would be go out and see these movies, spend a few bucks on them, support the artists. And if you're a church, you know, or maybe have a movie night where you go to the theater together, you know, it's a great time to fellowship and have fun with one another, but also to talk about this. And I say all this because I don't really see this happening in the churches. You know, some it will, and I applaud Jack Hibbs and others. So the basis of this centered around the nations, and I'm just going to land on this closing note. When I talked about the various leaders and situations, and I talked about a lot of unfortunate things that are happening, but there are so many positive things. And, you know, my message here is we need to be engaged and aware. We need to pray for our nation's leaders. As an American, we need to pray for our government. We need to pray for our president, the Congress, the Supreme Court, the leaders. And you know, the other thing that I want to point out, and you know, I said what I said about the similarities between what's happened to 45 in the legal struggles, the same I saw with Netanyahu. Gave him a bottle of champagne or a book or something, and they wanted to just, you know, go after him and take him down. Bolsonaro in Brazil was recently reportedly, you know, his election was stolen from him. And they just put into law in the last month or so, 2 months, that he cannot run for elective office for 8 years. This is a Christian. There are Christians in Bolivia, president of Bolivia, I believe she's on trial now. Liechtenstein, Hungary, you know, there are people who are taking enormous risk that we need to pray for. In addition, we need to pray for others. So if you're following me on video, I wanted to show you something. It's called Inside the Revolution. This came out probably over 20 years ago. Joel Rosenberg, who I am an adamant fan of supporting his ministry, his books. He's a brilliant author. But he produced this book and DVD, and it really had a profound impact on me. And it's subtitled, How the Followers of Jihad, Jefferson, and Jesus Are Battling to Dominate the Middle East and Transform the World. And, you know, he talked about, you know, the terrorist groups, Bin Laden type and ISIS and those and the Muslim Brotherhood, but also what he calls the reformers, which are people like today you would say President Sisi in Egypt. He's certainly not the perfect man, and there's probably many things that people can find wrong with him. But what he is doing is he's restoring the Coptic churches in Egypt, where the Muslim Brotherhood was trying to take it down. He's building up the cathedrals. He's securing the Christians' rights to preach where, you know, it's not an easy place. The same could be said for King Hussein in Jordan, where he's taking a moderate stance. And again, I don't agree with everything he's done and said, but he's in a difficult position of where he is and, you know, where he has jurisdiction or his government has jurisdiction over the Temple Mount. And he's certainly had his encounters with Israel and Netanyahu. The president of Morocco, his name eludes me offhand. He's another one, Bahrain, UAE. So these are not Christians, but I would encourage you to pray for them. Pray for these people. When I opened up about the, I forget the gentleman's name. He's a Christian. He goes to world countries. Jim, it'll come to me. Probably come to me in the middle of the night. But I did want to give him credit for some of the things that I learned from him that he pointed out. But he is a Christian who visits and has access to many, many leaders. And, you know, I was blessed by him and Joel Rosenberg and others of their experiences in front of these world leaders. So, again, you know, pray for our nation, pray for our leaders. And, you know, maybe every day, every week, pick a nation, pick a people, you know, learn about them, find out about them, and see what can be done. So, you know, that's my two cents. I'll get off my soapbox. But, you know, again, I just wanted to say thank you to you for listening. Hopefully this opened your eyes to some things that are going on around the world and how it lines up with Scripture. Because ultimately, Jesus is coming back. And do you have that relationship with him? And, you know, I pray that you do. If you have any questions or comments, please email russickoutlook@gmail.com. Thank you for your time. And remember, as always, just my opinion.